Well, we are broadcasting live from more than 600 affiliates in North America, and that's including Puerto Rico, Guam, Canada, and you're listening to us too. I am out of the iHeart Studios in Louisville, Kentucky from 840 WHAS. And I want to say hi to all the folks out there at the International UFO Congress, having a good time out there in Arizona. This music's perfect for you. A lot of the coast friends that we have there, Lee Spiegel's out there, David Hatcher Childress, Dr. David Jacobs is out there as well, Nick Redfern, John Greenwald, good friends of ours are all out there, Nick Pope. Some Canadian guys out there as well. Chris Rutkowski. How you doing, Chris? Hope you're having fun out there. We appreciate you guys always keeping up with us. And also, by the way, if you want to know where George Norrie's going to be so you can go out and meet him, well, go to coasttocoastam.com. He's going to be making a lot of appearances this year. The next one is going to be at the Victory of Light Psychic Festival. That sounds like a great one. It's in Cincinnati, Ohio. That's not too far from here. I might go up there and see how he's doing. That's going to be April 10th that he's going to be there. And then he's got Contact in the Desert. That's another great one at the Joshua Tree Retreat Center. And that's not until June. So you guys can go ahead and set your calendars as well. But if you're like, hey, you know, I want to meet George, why don't you go to the site, see where he's going to be? Because again, he's going to be traveling around saying hi to a lot of people and being at a lot of events this year. So make sure you do that. And make sure you stick around because we've got our featured guest and Undertaker coming up next. It's Stanley Swan. He's author as well as mortician of over 30 years, and he's got some pretty interesting stories to tell us about what happens to us physically after we pass on. Stay with us here on Coast to Coast AM. Connie Willis here on Coast to Coast AM. Our guest tonight, featured guest, is Stanley Swan, undertaker, funeral director, mortician. I'm sure there's a bazillion other names for this man. Author as well, though, of the book Undertakings of an Undertaker, True Stories of Being Laid to Rest. Really neat guy. He had written into me at one point and told me about his book and a little bit more about himself, the information that he sent. But one of the cool things that really caught my eye, as well as what he does, is the fact that he used to be in radio. And I was like, oh my gosh, he's like one of us. So we got to talk to him and see what's going on with him. So everybody, please welcome first time guest, Stanley Swan. How are you, Stanley?
Very good, Connie. Thank you very much. I have to say, as we start our conversation, this is the first interview I've done in the dead of night, so to speak.
Oh no, it's just begun.
But it's a pleasure to be on. I appreciate you inviting me to be on Coast tonight. I think we'll have some exciting discussions on a number of topics tonight, so I'm excited about it.
Yeah, well, you know, when I think about the shows and what's going to go on, what we're going to talk about, what it is that I decide to do for the shows. I was trying to figure out what could I do this next time? What can I do this next time? And I've been dealing with my mom in and out of the hospital and surgeries and all sorts of things. She's doing great, of course, and she's in rehab. She's a strong lady. But while she's in rehab in one side of the building, the other side of the building is a nursing home. And, you know, we were kind of touring that. My mom was kind of showing me around the place. And as I went over there, I saw and felt a lot of kind of like it was their last place. And
yeah,
and I didn't like it. I didn't feel good. You just want to leave there, and then you stop and go, wait a minute, this is where we're all going to be. We need to liven this up. What can we do to change the energy? But, I mean, that's the way it is. It's sad that, I don't know, I mean, we all get to go there. I don't even know how to put it into words because none of us really want to even deal with that. But it was not cool at all. And this is what you deal with all the time, because once people leave that place that they know is going to be the end for, that's their last place they're going to stay, they go to you. So tell me about the process of all this, how you can handle that. Maybe you can put that into words of what it is that maybe I just don't want to go there.
Yeah, it's death is a difficult topic for most people to discuss or even to think about, actually. And at this very minute, there are men and women in the funeral service around the country we're taking that, what we call our first call, that first call information on a new death from, you know, a hospital, a nursing home, or a private care facility. And then they're rolling out in the middle of the night to go retrieve that deceased person and take them back to their respective funeral home and do the work that the family might have requested of that funeral director. Death is a difficult thing to talk about for most people, but I'm a big advocate for the funeral service in telling people that it's really important to think about what you want for yourself and what you want for your immediate family members down the road. A lot of people I've found over the years that I've spent in funeral service never really gave any thought about what they wanted for themselves, and I think it's important that people make plans for themselves. And if they're taking care of parents, to talk to them, to talk to their parents about what they want for themselves. I'm a firm believer that people should have what they want when we all get to that end time.
Well, you know, when the very first time I experienced anything besides, I don't know, I guess close to the family where I wasn't just going in to view somebody, but it was more of questions being asked of what do you want for this or what do you want for that, and when it talks about the stone, the headstone, and you know, just all the arrangements, was with my grandmother. We called her Granny. It was a long time ago, and I just remember all these questions being asked of the family, and I just thought, what's going on here? You know, she just passed away, and now all these questions are being asked. I don't understand what's happening. I couldn't even comprehend it because it was the first person in my family that I dealt with like that. And then I'm hearing all these questions going on that it's like, wait a minute, why would you even ask this stuff? This isn't important right now. But that's what you're talking about. Do that ahead of time and don't deal with that afterwards. It's so tough to have heard all that and thinking, why are we talking about this? Why aren't we feeling the feelings we should be feeling? That's what I felt like when I was younger and I experienced that.
And you were right on target there, Connie, because most people have similar, if not exact, feelings of what you've just talked about. They really don't want to think about that down the road or for themselves or their parents. But we all have to, you know, the old joke was, you know, the funeral directors and tax people are the things that continual to go on, and things we have to pay taxes, and we're all going to eventually pass away.
Right, and you know what? It doesn't scare me. Death doesn't scare me to die. You know that I think we, you know, go on. So that part doesn't scare me. But I guess losing people, the feelings around it. It's just, you know, ooh, it's just weird that there's a body. I mean, the magic's gone, you know, that soul, that thing that made it life is gone. And now all you see is like this mannequin, this thing, this vehicle just laying there.
Yeah. It really is. The human body is really a tent that I feel holds the soul, no matter what religion you may be of, or what you might think of as of afterlife, but the body is a tent, and when we do pass away, I'm a firm belief that you actually do leave your body, the soul leaves the body. Not sure where it goes. No one really knows where we go after we leave the body. If you remember, one of the great magicians of all time, Houdini, when he passed away, before he passed away, he said at one time that if it was at all possible, he was going to come back from the other side and tell us where he was and what it was like. And well, he never did that, so even Houdini could not pass the barrier. So it's an interesting conversation of the afterlife, and I think most people have their own ideas of, you know, where we go after we leave the body. I think we're actually maybe stay on the same plane. I listened to part of your last guest, Dave, and some interesting stories there about going out and doing searches for spirits and apparitions. And a lot of people have experienced those things, and I think maybe when we leave the body, we may stay on the same plane, maybe just near where we are. It's hard to know, but no one really knows for sure. And that's what's interesting about the whole topic.
Well, with you doing this for over 30 years, have you had any paranormal experiences with, I think that you would have more than anybody.
Funeral directors, I think, around the country are asked that a lot. Have you experienced any strange things in the years that you've been in the profession? Seen, heard, experienced those sort of things. Nothing totally unusual. A few things in my career. There's one story I can talk about a lady who brought an urn into a funeral home where I was a few years ago, and she said that while she was just sitting one day reading quietly, her mother's cremains were in this urn, a vase, she called it, was sitting on a shelf, and she heard like a scraping where you would run your fingernails along a chalkboard. You know that awful sound?
Absolutely, yeah, eek.
And she got up and looked around the room. There was no electronic media on at the time, and she went over to the urn, pardon me, where it was sitting on the shelf, and she noticed a crack had appeared in the urn. And from the crack, there was a small stream of cremains, we call them, or ash, coming out of the urn onto the shelf.
Ooh, how could that happen?
Yeah, she brought it into me that day in a brown paper bag, and we took it out of the bag, out of the box, put it on a cherry table where I was sitting at the time in the funeral home, and explained to me what had happened. And I examined it, and she asked me if I had any idea why that had cracked. And, of course, I didn't. After examining the urn, I could tell it was quite old, 15 to 20 years. It was glass, blown glass, quite ornate. And while we were there chatting, I had to take a phone call, so I left her for just a moment. And when I came back out, she had stood up from the chair she was sitting in and was back about 5 or 6 feet with her hand over her mouth, and she was looking at the urn. And I looked around, and I saw again that there was some ash streaming out of the crack of the urn. And the lady exclaimed to me, she said, "Well," she says, I can't explain it, but she says, "Mother was a great traveler in her life, and maybe she just doesn't have it out of her system."
Oh,
so that was kind of a strange circumstance. Ooh. And I did examine it. I asked her if she wanted to do something with the cremains in a different container, and she said no. She said, "I think I'll just pack Mom up here in her cremains and take her home." And Mary, maybe I've been keeping her for like 15 years, and she says maybe I'll think about going out and actually scattering the ashes this year. So she, we boxed the urn up, and she left the funeral home, and I never heard from the lady again. But that was kind of strange, because the crack in the glass had been taped. She had taped it really well, and it was just kind of strange that it sat there and all of a sudden started streaming again. So that was kind of unusual.
Oh, wow. Duct tape or scotch tape or anything. Just that's funny. That's funny, actually. Wow. It reminds me of a...
Go ahead.
Well, it reminds me of a story. I remember meeting this guy, and at one point, we were going out, and at one point he took me to his home and showed me his home, and I remember him just handing me something. And I'm not used to urns, you know. I guess we're people that we would bury people, so I'm not used to seeing that. And I just remember we went into his house, and he grabs this what was an urn, and he holds it, and he just looks at it, and then he looks at me, and then he hands it to me, and he goes, "Mom, meet Connie, meet Mom." And I was like, "What? Ah, what is this? I got to go. Thanks for the date and dinner. Bye."
And, you know, I think a lot of people, Connie, in a death situation, I found that many times over the years when I've been sitting with a family to make arrangements for a death in their family, that after a few minutes, people start becoming comfortable with the director they're meeting with, and they actually start sometimes making levity of the person's death and start asking questions of you. Many times they would ask me if I've heard any good death jokes lately, funeral jokes. I used to get that a lot from families, and I think it's their kind of an escape mechanism for people to maybe try to make a little levity out of the death.
Sure.
Not being disrespectful, but just trying to break the real tense situation that they're in at the time. And it's been amazing how people would, as I say, sit with me during arrangements conference and then say, "Hey, did you ever hear the one about?"
Any good ones that you can relate to us?
Oh, there's a lot. Do you want to hear a couple?
Absolutely.
All right. Yeah, that's what we're here for, is to entertain.
Absolutely. That's right.
Yeah, here's, I thought this was a pretty good one. There's tons of them out there. I don't know. I think that maybe some books have been written with death or funeral jokes, but I thought this was quite cute. It says, a funeral service is being held in the church for a woman who had just passed away. At the end of the service, the pallbearers carrying the casket accidentally bump into the wall, jarring the casket, and they hear a faint moan. They open the casket and find that the woman is actually alive. Well, she lives for 10 more years and then passes away. The ceremony is held again at the same church, and at the end, the pallbearers are again carrying the casket out. And as they are doing that, the husband says, "Watch out for the wall."
Oh, that's a good one. we can reverse that around too. That the husband, "Hey, watch that wall."
That's right. But there's a lot of funeral humor out there, and I think I know for myself, I've always been kind of lighthearted, and I think if I didn't laugh a little bit every day and try to be up, I don't know that I could have spent the time I did in the profession, because it's very wearing, both mentally and physically. Both, it's a difficult chore, responsibility to be in the funeral business, and I think those that are really good at it have to be light, have to know when they can smile, respectfully, of course, around people, and it makes people feel a little more at ease too when you can talk comfortably with people, and people will joke with you from time to time. As I say, they'll say, "Did you hear the one about?" So I think that it's important, this the smile as you do your work.
I think you're right too. I mean, you guys, I cannot imagine what you have seen, and of course that's what we're going to hear about, some more things like that tonight. But I mean, you've seen not just what has happened to people if it's not a natural death, but you've also, you know, the people that come in that are just devastated by what has occurred, and you are dealing with all of that. And to be able to do that, oh my gosh, that's, it does take a lot out of you. Do you have to work out? Do you take certain vitamins? You pump yourself up? I mean, you've got, that takes a lot.
Yeah, I have hobbies, and I'm a radio-controlled aircraft builder and flyer, and I collect some toys, and I do a number of different things. But everybody needs a hobby or two, and my wife, Sandra, says I have too many hobbies, but but you need that. I think most people, whatever their profession, they have a tendency to really become too entangled in their profession, and it's not good, healthy. It's not healthy, mentally or physically. The funeral business is one that you can easily spend 60 hours a week in, especially if you're an owner, if you own your own funeral home, and you live there, and for many years we did. And you have a lot of sacrifice when you're doing that. But it's a very wearing profession just because of the hours. Because right now, as we speak, as I said at the onset of the broadcast, there are funeral directors who are around the country getting first calls and taking death information and going out right now to do that work. And if it's a 2 o'clock call, you go out at 2 o'clock. And if it's a 4 o'clock call, you go out at 4 o'clock. If it's your anniversary and you might be out to dinner and your phone goes off and you have no one else to call to do your work, you pay the bill and you take off. And funeral people work nights, holidays, weekends, and they're much like people in the hospital profession and the fire and police and ambulance. And we're
and
in
it
that
It sounds like radio people as well, because we're live 24/7. Hey, everybody, it's Coast to Coast AM. I'm Connie Willis with mortician Stanley Swan. More to come. And that's Juice Newton on Coast to Coast AM. Never thought you'd hear her on that, huh? If you've noticed on TV, there's a whole lot of O.J. Simpson stuff going on. The other Juice, but this is the other Juice. And that's Queen of Hearts. That's a good tune. Hey there, it's Connie Willis with you. All of those of you out there dating, and you're not like hooking up with the right people because you can't talk about all your paranormal cool stuff that you like to talk about. Well, don't forget about Paranormal Date and ParanormalDate.com. Go there. That's George's a masterpiece where you can meet other people of like mind. In fact, I mean, it's doing so well that they're close to, I guess we've got like about 38,000 people just about there. So nearing 40,000 people. That's incredible. So there are other people out there that think like you. And me and us. So that's kind of cool to meet people like that. Now, we have something else too. And that's if you're interested in meeting others and maybe you want to say you're into conspiracy stuff, because some paranormal people are not into conspiracy so much. Well, we've got one just for that. ConspiracyDate.com. He has held on to these great domain names as well. And now you can talk about people and the subjects with JFK, Marilyn Monroe, 9/11, the moon landings. Yeah, some neat stuff. We've all found out about that today too, right? Roswell, whatever it is, you can meet your match at conspiracydate.com. So that's some really interesting things. And so those of you single out there, another choice for you with people, again, of like mind. I hope you're going to stay with us as we continue our discussion with Stanley Swan, mortician, here on Coast to Coast AM. It's Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. Of course, I'm one of the guest hosts on the weekend. Very happy to be here, Connie Willis. And we are talking with funeral director, undertaker, mortician, Stanley Swan. And Stanley, what other names and titles do you have?
Well, those pretty much sum it up. The old term, Connie, back 100 years ago was undertaker. Or digger, you know.
Oh, digger even. Oh, hey, digger.
We still get that from time to time. But the funeral director is the descriptive words used by most people in the profession now. But undertaker and mortician, they all pretty much mean the same thing. But the business has changed radically in the last 50, 60, 80 years. We can talk about that as time goes on, too. I want to ask you a question.
Oh, sure. Yep.
We always talk about last half hour. We talked about the soul departing the body and where it goes and that sort of thing. And most people have an idea of what they were going to be when they were younger. Did Connie Willis know that she was going to be in the entertainment industry? Were you born to do that? Do you feel?
I did, absolutely, and everybody that ever knew me would vouch for that. Yeah, I knew what I was going to do, yes. I knew it was going to be, I knew it was going to be in the media. It had to be, as a kid, it was a movie star. I was going to be a movie star. But as time went on, it was like, TV, radio, just something in that medium. And I think, radio was the last thing that was going to be on my list. I just did not want to be in radio because it's just, I wanted to be seen. I don't know what it was, but, and then of course, radio has been the most wonderful thing of all when it comes to any of the work that I've done around cameras or anything. Because as radio, as you know, it's the best foundation to speak and you learn your way if you trip around. It doesn't matter because you've learned how to get out of it and talk in front of audiences, the bazillions, and it doesn't matter, but radio is the best of the best. So I've always known that, and it's funny that you asked that because I always wondered why I knew what I wanted to do, and most people didn't. And and I remember this great, really, really good psychic guy. I didn't even ask the question, but he had looked at me at one point and just said, "And by the way, in your past life, you did exactly the same stuff you're doing now, and that's why you've always known what you've wanted to do." I didn't even ask it. He told me that, and I thought, it gave me relief right then and there. It gave me peace with that question that I had all my life, and I believed that was true because I felt the peace on that. But what? Let's turn back around to you. Did you always think that you? I mean, do people dream to be a undertaker?
I think a lot of people, Connie, are actually born into the profession today because their mom and dad owned a funeral home, or their grandfather owned a funeral home, or the great-grandfather owned a funeral home. Not so in my family. I had a great uncle who was in the funeral business back in the early 1900s in our small town, but it actually skipped a generation before it caught up to myself. But as a kid, I kind of knew what I was going to do. My sister, Mary Jane, and I, and my brothers, Ed and Gary, born on a fifth-generation dairy farm in a small town. And when we were little, my sister, Mary Jane, and I, we ride our bikes up and down a dirt road. And when we would find a sparrow that had been hit with a car or something, we would have a little funeral for the bird and bury the bird. And I think that's not unusual because a lot of kids around the country do that, still do that. But I kind of knew then that, well, gee, maybe this is something I am going to do down the road. But you talked there a second ago about past life. Did you ever look into past lives? Because I did that not too long ago and found something interesting.
Oh, what? What'd you find out?
My past life said that I was born in 1890 in Washington, D.C. At age 16, I moved to New York City, and I was a chemist. Isn't that interesting? Because now I've dealt with embalming chemicals for the last four decades.
Yeah. What if you came up with something?
Yeah, well...
You know what I mean?
Do I believe in past lives or future lives? I'm not sure. But another whole subject for your paranormal investigation, right?
Oh, it's these are things we all talk about all the time, and thank goodness because we can, you know, bring coast to coast to everybody that way. So let me ask you this. Let's just use me here. Let's use me. I die. I pass on. I guess there's a lot of names for that too. I pass over. And how many phrases can you tell me right now of what happens to me? And then I want to hear, if you can, step by step, what happens to me. And I'm going to say as well that I pass away here tonight in this studio.
Okay. If that happens, And if you are not currently seeing a physician, if you're not under a physician's care, and you pass away or die at home or at work unattended, as the justice did in Texas the other day, that's a whole other story. But in your situation, an unattended death in most states is going to require a coroner or a medical examiner to come to the scene to make sure there's no foul play involved, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, once that is satisfied, and they say, no, Connie's been having problems, her death is probably natural, if they do not order an autopsy to find out the circumstances of your physical death, then the law enforcement would call your family member and say, okay, Connie's passed away, what do you want to her disposition be? Who do you want us to call? And at that time, then the family would call a funeral director. And the funeral director would come and pick you up, take you back to the funeral home, and then they would check with the family to see what they wanted for you, to see if you had made any wishes for yourself. Did you want to be embalmed? Did you want to be buried? Did you want to be cremated? Do you want to donate your body to science? There's a lot of different avenues to go there.
So you actually come to the scene, and you are the one to pick me up.
We could. In rural America, funeral directors are still going out to make removals from places of death after a coroner pronounces the person dead. In most metro city areas now, funeral directors don't go to a scene. They usually have a coroner go to the scene. And then lots of times the coroner will make the removal back to the medical examiner's office. Or if they release the body at home, a lot of people are dying at home now with hospice care. People pass away at home. people were born at home. They like to pass away at home, and if they pass away at home, a coroner will just come out, or the physician that the person was seeing pronounced the person dead, and then they'll call the funeral director, and the funeral director will go to the house and actually pick up the body and take it back to the funeral home. So
okay, but you don't do that with crime scenes or anything, though. You're not
usually not. However, the small town that my wife and I were in years ago, in rural countryside, we were still going to death scenes, meeting a coroner there. After pronouncement of death, the coroner would say, or take the body to Rochester. That was our nearest medical examiner for autopsy. If it was a natural death, the family would say, no, Stan, go ahead, take the body back to your funeral home, and we'll talk to you later in the day about what we want to do for a funeral.
Okay, so how about right now, let's say I have nine lives, and you're going to be dealing with the first three, and the first one is that I have wanted to... And I'll give you just an idea so you know ahead of time that I'm going to donate my body of the first life. I'm going to have it cremated the second life, and the third life I'm going to have it buried. So tell me the procedures of each one of my passings.
Okay, the first one being again?
is remembering what I said.
Yes,
no.
Yeah.
You didn't get that? The first one would be donating my body. What happens from there?
Okay. Yeah. Usually in most body donations, you have to set that up ahead of time. I know where we are in New York State, the University of Rochester and Syracuse Upstate Medical Center, if you want to donate your body for science, you have to do the paperwork ahead of time.
Right, because it's on your driver's license. Right?
The organ donation is usually put on your driver's license. I don't know that in New York State, where I live, there's not a body donation checklist. It's only for the donation of organs, organ donation. Body donation is entirely different. Basically, what body donation is, they take your whole body, and they will keep you basically in a drawer in a medical facility for medical students to take your body out every day and dissect your body for examination. And that's how they teach new physicians in the country, is through body donations. If you're just donating organs, basically what happens at the time of death, and you have an organ donation listed, they call in teams from different parts of the country. Depending on where the death is, they will fly in a team to harvest what they call harvest the organs. That has to be done pretty quickly in order for the organs to remain viable, to get into that national transplant system, so they know where those organs are going to go. So there's quite a lot involvement in both of those scenarios. But if you're donating your entire body, it'll probably be kept for about a year after they finish with it. They usually the body's cremated, and the cremains are returned to the next of kin, and then they can do with it as they please.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you may get back, I guess it's probably put into an urn to where they don't know that there's just a little bit left of whatever.
Right.
Oh, wow. Okay.
After cremation of a body, the cremation process, the cremation of cremains that come back, usually in the size of maybe a quart or a quart and a half of cremains, there's really more than most people think. There's quite a lot there, but it's basically just bone chip, you know. It's very fine bone chip. The body's 98% water, so when you're cremated, most of you go up the flue. You're gone, you know. So what's left is actually bone that has been chipped down.
You go up the what?
Water. You're 98% water.
Right.
So when you're cremated, you pretty much just dissipate upon cremation. Now, the second scenario.
That's a visual for me. Thanks very much. Okay. You said you go up the flume. I was like, oh, my gosh. Okay. Right. Okay. So
you're pretty much just dissipated into the atmosphere because you are water.
Right.
With a few minerals thrown in. I think the last thing I saw not too many years ago, what your body was worth, was just a few cents as far as the mineral content. But the body is really not worth too much. Now, the second scenario was you're going to be cremated.
Cremated, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Basically, the funeral director gets the necessary paperwork from the state in which you live. The next of kin signs the release for the cremation, verifying that you do not have a pacemaker or any other battery on your body, because pacemakers with batteries will explode in a crematorium and can actually do damage. So your family is going to tell a funeral home that if you do have a pacemaker, it's going to have to be physically removed from you before you're cremated. If usually families do not want any jewelry cremated. A lot of crematories do not allow any metal at all going into a retort. Again, gold bands or anything like that pretty much dissipate. Gold melts very quickly. Crematory temperature is usually 1,800 degrees plus, so jewelry is usually gone. Anything else that would be in your body, any implants, hips that have been replaced, anything like that, just go through the cremation process and come out afterwards. So after the two-hour process, after you're cremated, what's left goes through a bone chipper and actually is put down into very fine chips of bone and put into an urn or a vase and sent back to the family. And usually you can usually have them within a day after cremation, sometimes quicker.
So the bone doesn't burn that well? You have to crush it?
The large bones have to be chipped, yes. The small bones in the hands and the fingers, or the hands and the feet, the small bones do disintegrate, but the big bones have to be shredded and chipped in order to get them into that container. And then in most states, you can do pretty much what you wish with cremains. People always used to ask us here in New York State, can I take my cremains out and throw them in the lake? Can I put them on a walking path? Or I said, well, you can almost do anything with them, but you should always check with a local, see if there are any local ordinances against spreading cremains in a lake or on a pathway. And there's lots of interesting things that people do with cremains.
Yeah, what have you heard? And do you think people actually go and ask permission? I think they would just lay it down anyway.
That's usually what happens, Connie. You say, oh, yeah, we'll take care of that. And then they just go out and just do it. So there are more cremains spread around the country and in public places than most people would realize. But there's nothing wrong with that, because there's nothing that would harm anybody. You know, there's no chance of disease or any bacteria or anything left after the cremation process. So
the only problem is if you drop like food down and you do that 10-second rule, and you know, maybe you've dropped it down on some sort of ashes there and you don't know it. You know, you got to think about that stuff.
Yeah, people do interesting.
But don't do that.
Cremains. So I've seen people who've loaded cremains into their shotgun shells. So they've hunted with their father and took their father's cremains and put in shotgun shells to take him out for a last hunt.
Oh, wow.
All kinds of interesting things like that. And there's probably several funeral directors around the country smiling right now, because they all have good stories about what people have asked, what they could do with cremains after the fact. So,
List your top three.
We've had the request for ashes being thrown out of an airplane, and we have done that before.
Okay.
Scattered in the air. We have scattered at sea. We have actually taken a request for one family to have cremains. There is a shuttle mission that was sent up years ago that had a number of cremains involved, and they actually kicked the cremains in outer space. That was part of a shuttle mission. I can't tell you which one it was, but that actually occurred.
Oh, wow. Can you not tell us because you don't remember, or
I
you were
not
told not to?
Oh, okay. and there are other missions that are, well, with the demise of NASA in the last few years, it's hard to know where that's going to go. But there are people that actually want their cremains to be out there with Mr. Spock.
Well, absolutely. And hey, we're going to talk about, my third death and being able to, just bury me. So stay with us, everybody. We're talking with mortician, funeral director, undertaker, the name that you'd like to choose, and author as well, Stanley Swan, telling us his stories after 30 years of doing this. So stay with us here. It's Connie Willis on Coast to Coast AM.